This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about Nutella.
Or Nutella. We're going to discuss the pronunciation, right?
We are. We are.
Thank God.
And we should also say that we are taping this episode remotely. And by remotely, I mean like extra remotely.
Extra remotely.
Extra remotely. In that I am in Seattle and Matthew is in Tokyo.
Oh, and believe me, you're going to hear about that later in the episode when we get to segments.
Okay. So anyway, happy December, everybody. And, you know, nothing says December like some hazelnut chocolate spread.
That's true. Nothing says December like teenager of the show, December, who as of this December will no longer be a teenager.
Oh my, what are we going to call them?
I was going ACOTS D. Yeah, adult child of the show, December ACOTS D.
Okay.
I think they're okay with that. I'll check.
Okay. Okay. Well, anyway, today we're talking about Nutella. I first encountered this stuff when I...
Wait, question. Is this memory lane?
No, this is memory lane.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
I was highly disoriented for a moment there.
So when I was in eighth grade, my cousin Sarah was in her junior year of high school, and she spent, I think, all of that year with a host family in northern Germany.
Okay, like the Black Forest. I do not know German geography at all.
I don't either, but I do remember that it was Schleswig-Holstein.
Oh, you should have said that in the first place. Everyone was Schleswig-Holstein.
Okay. Anyway, this is a lovely family, and I adored everything that Sarah's host mom cooked. But what I really remember was the first breakfast.
Wait, you were there too?
Oh, well, so what I was going to say, I didn't finish the last part of my setting up of the scene here. So spring break, when I was in eighth grade, my mom took me and my cousin Katie, who was Sarah's little sister, my mom took the two of us to go visit Sarah.
Oh, a classic Schleswig-Holstein spring break.
That's right. That's right. Uh-huh. And one of the things that I remember about eating with Sarah's host family is that they had crusty bread and Nutella at breakfast.
Yes.
And I'd never encountered Nutella before. I thought this was the most magical stuff. I mean, I thought it was mind-blowing that this was served at breakfast time.
And this, I hope we get into this when we talk about the product, because, like, I feel like this took place back when Nutella was like a European thing, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. No, I had never heard of it before. And to this day, I still think of Nutella as a German thing. Although, as we're going to discuss, it's Italian all the way.
Oh, I don't think I think when you said that, my thought was, oh, it must be Swiss. I don't know why.
No. Although I will say, so after that trip to Germany, I remember we brought home Nutella. Like, you couldn't buy it here yet, or not in Oklahoma.
Okay, yeah, yeah,
anyway.
Of course.
And then I remember when I was 18, so the summer after I graduated from high school, my cousin Katie, so the younger sister of Sarah, Katie and I did one of those, like, your rail pass, you know, few week things in Europe. And we stayed at a youth hostel in Zurich that I remember had this incredible like breakfast situation, all kinds of sliced cheeses and these hard crusty rolls and breakfast meats and single serving little things of Nutella. Like we have here of like Smucker's jam or like whipped
butter. Oh yeah, no, like a peel off foil.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, that's right. We have arrived. Like we are in Europe now. We can have Nutella at breakfast.
Yeah, in Europe, like all over Europe, the fountains in the public square run brown with Nutella.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know where I like to go for spring break? Oktoberfest.
Yeah. Good one.
I've been sitting on that joke for like 4 minutes. Like, this is not even funny, but no, it has to come out of my mouth or I'm going to be thinking about it the rest of the show.
Is this like in the Southern Hemisphere Oktoberfest?
I was thinking that too. Like in Australia, I'll ask my singing teacher, Doug, lives in Australia. I'll ask him if they celebrate Oktoberfest
in the springtime,
April.
Terrific. Okay, Matthew, what about you? When did you first encounter this stuff?
Can I say one more thing about Oktoberfest? No. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and we often went to the Mount Angel Oktoberfest, which was like an Oktoberfest in a small town outside of Portland, and it was held in September. And this just blew my mind when I was a kid. You could celebrate Oktoberfest in September.
What even made you think of Oktoberfest in the first place?
Oh, because you said Germany, and you said going for spring break to Germany, and that made me think of like spring break and drinking beer, and that made me think of Oktoberfest.
Okay.
Also, I don't usually drink coffee, but I sure drank coffee before this taping this morning. So that's what you're going to get out of me.
Oh, you are extra zingy.
That's right. People, I've got zing, I've got zip, I've got pizzazz.
Do you have any, do you have a zest for life?
I think I may have a zest for life.
Oh my God. Our listeners are not going to recognize you. You sound so happy.
Don't I usually sound happy?
You do. You do. But no, you sound extra happy today.
I have a bag of mandarin oranges in the fridge. That's my zest for life.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, my memory lane. Okay.
Yeah.
So I definitely encountered Nutella like sometime like maybe in my early 20s, not in Europe, just like when it started to like trickle into the US. And so I definitely had it before December was born, but they were a big fan of Nutella from a young age. So that's when we started keeping it in the house and we still
Where did they first encounter it?
I think I just like brought it home like on the idea that like maybe this is something this kid will eat.
Ah, okay.
So, and they sure did. So now I still always keep it in the house, and I will often have, I'll make two pieces of toast or two halves of an English muffin and put peanut butter on one and Nutella on the other, and then like decide in the moment which one I'm going to eat first.
And so this is always at breakfast time.
The biggest excitement of my week. Yes. Always at breakfast time.
Okay. Okay. Hold on. Now, before we go any further, we've got to address the pronunciation issue.
Please.
So what I'm learning from Wikipedia is that in the U.S., it's primarily pronounced Nutella.
And I hear that a lot, but I always say Nutella.
Well, I think that, at least according to Wikipedia, is the UK pronunciation, like the British English pronunciation.
Okay.
And then I'm almost positive that in Italy, and when I encountered it in Germany, I think it was a new sound as opposed to a
na
sound. But I don't think there's as much of an emphasis put on the second syllable.
Yeah, I don't think they have a na sound in Italian. Like, have you ever heard an Italian person say na?
I haven't.
If
we have any listeners who have heard an Italian person say na. Yeah.
We don't want to hear from any Italian listeners.
No,
we just want to hear from the people standing next to them overhearing them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. So what is this stuff? Matthew, you a minute ago said something, you like were very clear about the fact that it's brown. And
I could not be more clear about the fact that this is brown.
Love that you said that because Wikipedia describes it as a brand of, quote, brown sweetened hazelnut cocoa spread.
Okay. A classic brown brand.
Yeah. When we got Gilbert, the way that like the puppies were differentiated from one another in the litter is that from like an early age, there was like a little color. They were assigned a color and a ribbon of that color was tied around their neck. This is the beginning of a horror story about a puppy with a green ribbon.
No. Oh, and if you untie it, the puppy's head falls off. Okay.
That's right. Yes. That's right. Yeah.
Literary jokes.
Anyway, Gilbert was, his color was brown. And so every now and then when we reminisce about Gilbert, when he was just a little puppy, we refer to him as brown. Like,
oh, that's delightful. Which one do you wish you had chosen instead?
Well, I think that originally we really wanted black or light blue, I think, but they were all claimed by the time we got there.
Okay.
So we went with brown. And we made absolutely the right choice. All this to say, Nutella is brown.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. It is manufactured by the Italian company Ferrero, which a lot of people know as the maker of Ferrero Rocher, the little like hazelnut truffle things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course. I think of these as like a candy that I used to think was fancy when I was a kid.
Exactly. Exactly. I remember, at some point, like in my 20s, I remember somebody I knew being given like a 12-pack of Ferrero Rocher at Christmas time, and they thought it was the coolest thing ever, right?
Yeah, I did not know this was the same. Is the same company that makes Nutella?
That's exactly right. And I was really interested or surprised in some ways when doing this research to find that the product is still made by Ferrero. And I'm not seeing anywhere that Ferrero is owned by like some bigger conglomerate, which I think is a little unusual these days.
I think so too. Do you remember when we were kids, there was like a food conglomerate called Beatrice that bought a bunch of food companies and then put on TV commercials about how you should be happy that your brand, the brand you love, has been bought by Beatrice Foods? And I remember the jingle from these absolutely nonsense commercials.
Sing it, Matthew.
Beatrice, you've known us all along.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It made no sense then. It makes no sense to me now. Okay.
Okay. Nutella has been around since 1964 and has always been made by Ferrero. And in fact, the product itself was created by Ferrero, and the founder and the family that still runs it, as far as I can tell, is the Ferrero family.
Okay, I have a question. So yeah. When you eat a Ferrero Rocher, which I haven't in a while, I sort of imagine it being like a crispy ball on the outside and then like a cream on the inside.
That
or is it crispy on the
right.
inside also?
I feel like it might have some crispies on the inside.
Okay, then this ruins the bit because I was wondering if they got Nutella by like scooping the insides out of a bunch of Ferrero Rochers and putting it in a jar.
We're going to get there.
We're going to find out. Okay.
We're going to find out. Okay. So before we can talk about Nutella, I want to do a little sort of background on the concept of like hazelnut and chocolate blended together into a paste.
Okay.
So this is called gianduja. That's the Italian word for it.
Yes.
I'm sure that pretty much all of us have seen the word gianduja like at a gelato shop, right?
Yes, that's exactly what came to mind.
Yeah. So gianduja is just a blend of chocolate with hazelnut paste. Basically, in its earliest form, it was chocolate that was stretched with hazelnut paste or hazelnut butter.
Okay. When you say stretched, do you mean like increased in like bulked up or do you mean stretched like taffy?
I mean it bulked up. And here's the deal. Okay. So we're going to talk now about the Napoleonic Wars, Matthew.
Oh, I figured we would.
Yeah. No episode is complete without a visit from everybody's favorite
Emperor.
Napoleon Bonaparte.
Abby, could you please play the Napoleonic Wars theme song here, segment theme song? Thanks. Okay.
So gianduja was invented in Turin, which is a town in the Piedmont region of Northwest Italy. Okay. So it was invented there sometime between 1796 and 1814. The reason they even thought to do it is that during the time of the Napoleonic Wars, So like early 1800s, Napoleon basically tried to put the squeeze on the British Empire by embargoing.
That guy was always putting the squeeze on
by
things.
Embargoing all their goods. This was called either the Continental System or the Continental Blockade.
Okay.
But there was a shortage of cocoa in Europe. I don't really understand this. Maybe it's because most cocoa came in through like British, like the British Empire.
That makes sense.
So any ports that were controlled by the French at this time would not receive anything from the British Empire. And so within Europe, in all these ports controlled by the French, there were shortages in all kinds of goods that usually would come from Britain. And I guess cocoa was one of them.
All right.
So so there was this chocolate maker in Turin who only had like a little bit of chocolate and he needed to make it go further. So what he did was he took like a very abundant local commodity, and that's hazelnuts.
All right.
And he ground them up into this kind of oily paste and used that to basically make the little bit of chocolate he had go further. And this was gianduja.
Okay. So that couldn't have been the first thing he tried, right? What do you think were the combinations that he rejected? I'm going to guess number one, plaster of Paris.
Okay. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Number two.
Chalky. Very chalky, though.
Number two, sidewalk chalk. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so.
Number three, barley.
Okay. Hold on. So the name gianduja, it comes from a.
Like it's Italian for John Dory.
It's a character.
Wait. So my joke is like too close to the truth.
Maybe. Who is John Dory actually, other than a fish?
As I was saying it, I was like, I don't know. I just know it's a fish.
Okay. Anyway, all right.
John Dory fought in the Napoleonic Wars or possibly the Punic Wars. I don't know.
Okay. So in Piedmont, there was a like carnival character and a marionette character that was called
that were just wandered around town bothering people.
Wait, this character's name was gianduja, and he was said to represent like the archetype of a Piedmontese citizen.
Okay.
Okay. And so
what characteristics did gianduja have that made him so, so very Piedmont?
Maybe he was just full of hazelnuts.
Wait, was he the star of the TV series Piedmontia? It was just like a bunch of sketches about like, you know, people, hipsters in Piedmont are always doing this.
That's right. So that's where the name gianduja comes from this character in like Piedmontese culture named gianduja.
Okay.
So something I didn't know is that gianduja can be consumed as bars. Like it can be molded like regular chocolate. It's just a little
softer. I've had that for sure. Yeah.
It's a little softer because of the hazelnut oil. Or it can be, of course, a filling for chocolates. And it can be in either like a milk version or a plain version, which I guess would be a little bit more like dark chocolate.
All right.
So this is the original concept behind Nutella and other chocolate hazelnut spreads. And the big difference, of course, is that these spreads are spreadable.
I was going to say, how do they make it spreadable?
Well, in part, it's through vegetable oils and stabilizers. And also, so anyway, what makes like gianduja different from Nutella and commercial hazelnut chocolate spreads is that the latter, these spreads, use cocoa powder and vegetable oils, whereas gianduja just uses cocoa butter-based chocolate.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So... Oh no, I deleted the portrait of Pietro Ferrero.
Okay, listeners, I want you to hear what Molly did to me here. She wrote in the agenda, "Behold, Pietro Ferrero. In this portrait, he appears both sad and vaguely menacing. Portrait omitted."
Oh, God. Hold on, I'm going to pull it up.
Please, send me this bad boy. I want to see the bad boy.
Okay.
My breath is bated. Oh, I see Molly's cursor.
Okay, reload your
page. Oh, wow. Okay. So we're going to link to this.
Sad and vaguely menacing?
Yeah, we're going to link to this in the show notes. Yeah, he's like a sad man with like, you know, fits of anger. Like when things aren't going well in the factory, Like, no, I'm sure working at the candy factory in the 40s was great.
Yeah.
I take back what I just said. I'm sure the children working there had a good old time. This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about, like, the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you. If you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best, You go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
I know you love it when I do corporate history. So are you ready?
Yes, I do.
Okay, here we go. So Pietro Ferrero was a candy and chocolate maker in the town of Alba, which is also in Piedmont.
Okay.
And he opened what Wikipedia refers to as like a laboratory to create sweets and things in 1942.
Okay.
And of course, this was in the middle of World War II, as you may know. And his company...
Yeah, this sounds like this laboratory was like secretly making munitions or chemical weapons or something, right?
Well, they were probably making them out of hazelnuts because That was very widely available and very low cost raw material for him to use.
Yeah. Did you see the episode of Piedmontia where they invent the hazelnut gun?
You are never allowed to have coffee before we tape ever again. You're fired. Okay, hold on. That was good, though. I did like that.
Yeah, okay, great.
Okay, hold on. So this is straight from Wikipedia. Okay, so Pietro, who lived close to the town of Turin, he had often watched the workers there go to work, and he had begun to try to brainstorm a sweet alternative, so something he could produce with his company that could replace the bread and tomatoes that these workers would take with them to work. Now, I'm sure why.
Pause. Okay. First of all, this is exactly what I imagine CEOs are like. He doesn't have anything to do, so he's sitting looking out the window, my workers coming to my factory.
How can I make them buy my products? No, these are workers in a different town. And
how is he watching them?
Well, because he had so Matthew, I omitted part of his history where he had opened a pastry shop in Turin and it failed. Okay. And then he moved back to Alba, which I think is where he was from. But as he was, running this factory, making sweets in Alba, he was reflecting upon the workers he'd seen in Turin.
Okay. And he was thinking these poor saps eating bread and tomatoes.
I gotta what find a garbage way to sell food. Something to them.
Like, can't we get them to eat candy for lunch instead?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yes. That's exactly what industrialists are like.
Yeah, all right.
How can we do bad things?
Right.
Okay, so this is how he invents the stuff that came to be called Nutella. He wanted it to be substantial, but also affordable. Substantial in the sense that it could sustain a hard laboring worker.
Yes.
Throughout the day. So this became like his mission.
And available in the form of a paste so it could just be dispensed directly into the worker's mouth so they wouldn't have to take a break.
He apparently worked on this nonstop, according to Wikipedia, and even at night, trying different doughs to find the ideal recipe. His wife, Piera.
Did you say doughs?
Yeah, that's what Wikipedia says. What? Well, then, you know, like,
how is a dough involved?
Well, a paste, a stuff.
Okay, all right.
A non-Newtonian fluid.
Okay.
You could poke your finger in it, but if you slapped it, it was hard.
Have you ever slapped the Nutella? I have.
Happy you are. Absolutely insane.
We're going to record remotely like at the same time next week, and it's going to be just as bad.
Jesus, dude. Okay, I have places to be. Could you just let me finish this?
All right, yes. This is an important history lesson.
It is. Okay.
Okay.
So, you know, he's working really hard, and
I'm literally just laughing. I didn't even say anything.
Anyway, in 1946, after 4 years of working on this product, he launched this like stuff onto the market and called it Past. Matthew.
You said he launched this stuff onto the market. That's funny.
Anyway, he called it Pasta Gianduja. It was a mixture that was like packaged like a solid block in aluminum foil, and you could like transport it, cut it, and spread it on bread. So it's like a thick cream.
Okay.
Okay.
This and just sounds designed, like drugs.
It was designed precisely like for these workers, right?
Yes.
So he made a little bit. It was a huge success, and it was especially a big success among like kids, which somehow he hadn't expected. Wikipedia says it
but
turned
it,
out to
was
be
was it the kids working at the factory?
I think you're going to really like how Wikipedia phrased this.
Okay,
it turned out to be a cheap dessert for children's snacks and gluttony. Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, so like if a kilo of chocolate at that time was 3,000 lira, this was 600 lira for a kilo.
Okay. Wow. So okay. So hazelnuts and vegetable oil really can stretch that chocolate a long way.
That's right. So production,
how many lira to the to like a 2023 dollar at that time?
So anyway, so production.
Okay.
Just sitting there smiling to yourself. So production went
I mean,
through
I
the roof.
I wanted to know that, but okay.
Well, I didn't look it up.
Okay.
Okay. Production goes through the roof. Soon they've got like 100 employees, and then soon they can't even produce this stuff like artisanally anymore. They got to like turn it into major factory stuff. And anyway, he founded Ferrero in 1946, I think, to market this product in particular. Then he died 3 years later.
How many years later?
Like 3 years later.
Okay.
So on March 2nd, 1949, Pietro Ferrero died, perhaps suffering from a heart attack, exhausted, it is said, by the frenetic distribution activity that he personally carried out, driving his Topolino through the streets of Piedmont. And I looked up a Topolino. It's what we today call the Fiat 500.
Okay. Is that the car that the band Rush wrote a song about? Oh, I think it is.
A Topolino?
Yeah.
Do you think that means like top of the line?
Oh, I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it, but I think you're absolutely right. And looking at it, like this is a top of the line car.
That's right. So anyway, you know, the company stays in the hands of the family and they develop a creamy version a couple years later in 1951. They call it Super Crema Gianduja.
Okay. Oh, so like right up until Pietro died, it was still sold in brick form.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And in 1951, they came up with a creamy version. Then in 1963, Michele Ferrero, who was Pietro's son, revamped it to market it throughout Europe. And the reformulated stuff was what he called Nutella. So I think up to this point, you know, it was super crema gianduja.
Okay, I have a question that you may or may not be able to answer, and then I have a fact. Great. The question is, was this before or after they developed Ferrero Rochers?
Oh, I bet it was, but I don't know, actually. I was going to say, I bet it was before, but I don't know. Are we going to do a Ferrero Rocher episode now?
I think we should, yes.
Okay.
And we'll just tell the same story about Pietro Ferrero.
Okay. Maybe I'll find some other pictures of him too.
And I was asking earlier how many lira to the US dollar at that time. I don't have the answer to that, but right now 3,000 Turkish lira equals 105 US dollars.
Okay. So it's
does that have anything to do with anything we've talked about? Not at all.
Great. Okay. So what is this stuff? Let's get down to it because...
because, as you mentioned, you need to get out of here soon.
I do. The main ingredients are sugar and palm oil. That makes up over 50% of it.
That checks out.
Yeah, that's before we even get to the hazelnuts or the cocoa. Hazelnuts are roughly 13%. Then you've got cocoa solids and you've got skim milk. Under Italian law, this cannot be labeled chocolate cream because it doesn't meet like minimum cocoa solids criteria.
I wonder, does it say chocolate on it like in the US?
So what mine says is...
Oh, you got some with you? Great.
Oh, it says the original hazelnut spread.
Ah.
And here it says hazelnut spread with cocoa.
Okay.
Ferrero uses 25% of the global supply of hazelnuts.
Wait, what?
Yes. Ferrero, the company, uses 25% of the global supply of hazelnuts. And it doesn't all go to Nutella, but the company as a whole for their products... use a quarter of all the world's hazelnuts.
We should take a moment to mention how much we like the Trader Joe's chocolate with 30% whole hazelnuts bar, milk
we
chocolate.
Should.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Has nothing to do with Ferrero, but I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe they make it behind the scenes and then Trader Joe's puts their private label on it.
Maybe. You know, basically, yeah, this stuff is at this point, it kind of doesn't have very much to do with like original like Piedmontese gianduja, which would have been like 70% hazelnut paste and like 30% chocolate.
Yeah, if we were like YouTubers, we would probably do a video where we get like a brick of real Piedmontese gianduja and then like eat it with some Nutella and mm-hmm. decide which one's better, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know how YouTube works.
I don't either. I don't. Maybe listener of the show, Kenji, wants to do that.
Big on YouTube. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Nutella is made in like lots of different facilities around the world, and ingredients and like the relative quantities of ingredients varies a bit country to country.
Okay. I bet the American one has more sugar.
I didn't find an exact statistic on it, but the North American market, the Nutella for the North American market is made both in Ontario, Canada, and in Mexico.
Okay.
So I'm kind of guessing that whatever they have in Canada is the same as what we have.
Yeah, that
here,
makes sense.
Yeah.
Except it has French on the label.
That's right. So yeah, this stuff contains sugar, modified palm oil, hazelnuts, cocoa powder, skim milk powder, whey powder, which is to stabilize the emulsion, soy lecithin, which is also to emulsify and keep it from separating and make it nice and spreadable.
How do they get it so smooth? Like, do they just like grind it really finely or do they also like push it through a screen?
You know, I probably could have pushed further in my research to find that. The Wikipedia description of how it's made did not get into how they make it so smooth.
We should like industrial espionage our way into the Nutella factory.
We should. We absolutely should.
Or Mexico.
I think you might find it interesting what they do with the hazelnuts.
I'm sure I will.
They go through two rounds of quality control.
Okay.
So when they arrive at the processing plant, this thing called a guillotine, that is what Wikipedia calls it, is used to chop the nuts so that they can quality control inspect the interior of the nuts.
Okay.
Then after that, they're cleaned and they're roasted. And then, this is the part you're really going to like, a second quality control comes via a computer-controlled blast of air, which removes bad nuts from the batch.
Okay. If you don't have an explanation for how that works... I'm sending you back to the journalistic.
I don't have an explanation. It's so baffling to me, and I suppose
they use computer air to blow away bad nuts. That's what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. Okay. It's a computer-controlled blast of air, and it removes the bad nuts.
Okay, wait. I think I genuinely know what this means, sort of. So the air is not deciding which are the bad nuts.
It's really?
They're using like some other like, you know, method of like sampling or spectroscopy or something, and to identify the bad nuts, and the air is just used to blast them off of the production line.
You know,
but I want to see this. I joked earlier about someone inventing the hazelnut gun, and this is it.
This is it. It's a computer controlled blast of air.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That is cool. Like we need to go onto YouTube and see if there's like an inside the Nutella factory video, because I bet there is. I want to see these nuts get blasted.
So Matthew, I bought a jar, which child of the show, or preteen of the show, really, June is very excited about. She's been eating it for breakfast every morning on toast.
You've got some on a butter knife there.
I've got some on a knife, and I'm gonna lick it.
Okay. I'm excited. I don't have any.
Mm. It tastes like Europe to me. Does it taste like Europe to you?
I don't remember. I have been to Europe a couple times. Well, to England a couple times and to France once. And I don't remember if I had it there or not. So not really. I don't really have that association. My favorite thing about Nutella is the texture, like how it's creamy, but also kind of chewy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love that chew.
I love this flavor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I do love the flavor.
No, but I was going to say, I love this flavor with like untoasted bread, like a crusty white roll.
Like a
European breakfast buffet, or you tear open a baguette and spread some Nutella on it, like untoasted crusty white bread.
I almost never spread anything on untoasted bread.
Why not?
Wife of the show, Lori, does, and maybe I should.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. I mean, so sweet. So sweet. And yet, I wouldn't want this product to be any different.
Do you need to refrigerate Nutella? I don't.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
You shouldn't refrigerate it. So the sugar makes it shelf stable, and the palm oil in it is very resistant to going rancid. So it's not going to go bad. And if you refrigerate it, the nut fats will harden in the fridge.
Oh, nut fats.
Yeah, nut fats. Don't mess with them.
You're doling out nut facts.
Uh-huh. Matthew, the last thing I want to say is, so we keep talking about eating this for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And in the US, Ferrero was actually sued for like linking Nutella in its advertising to the idea of a nutritious breakfast.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they had to pay a settlement and make changes to their labeling and advertising, because this is not part of a nutritious breakfast. This is part of a delicious breakfast.
Now, like in their commercials, do they have to put up a thing that says not part of this complete breakfast? That would be pretty great.
You know, I wonder if companies that say like part of this complete breakfast or part of your complete breakfast, do you think that it used to say like part of your nutritious breakfast?
And probably.
Then they had to change it to be like more neutral, like complete?
Maybe. I mean, like anything can be part of a complete breakfast if you start with a complete breakfast and then just add that thing like superfluously.
Motor oil, part of a
motor
complete
oil
breakfast.
Is like among this complete breakfast. It's just hanging out.
Okay. Do we have anything that we want to say about like uses of Nutella other than what we've already discussed?
That's a good question. Like I really only ever put it on toast or eat it directly out of the jar. Mm-hmm. Like I know it figures in desserts, certainly, sometimes, mm-hmm. like bar cookies. Mm-hmm. I've had a bar cookie made with a Nutella.
Did you say made with a Nutella?
I did.
Okay. You know, I know that, so I love Nutella, but I do just kind of want it on its own, because I think part of what's so good about it is the texture.
Right. And like it can, when used in baking, like it can turn into like a glue.
Oh, it can.
Yeah. I feel like I've had some Nutella things where it's like, okay, this is like too kind of like thick and gluey because of the Nutella, and I want it more on its own. Because like if you remove any more moisture from it, it's gonna be too thick.
Yeah.
And that's what baking will do. It will remove moisture.
Ah, heat will do that. Yes.
Heat.
Yeah. Matthew, you know what? We have some spilled mail.
This is from listener Jennifer, who asks, Hi, I was just listening to your episode on supermarket lunches and was super obsessed with the M2M market that Matthew mentioned that he now lives only a few blocks away from. I just wanted any updates on that. Matthew shared his thoughts about how maybe one day it'd break his heart and go out of business, and I'm hoping that wasn't a foreshadowing. And was also wondering if you all would consider going there for breakfast or lunch one day for an episode. Maybe even just pick up something from there and then share your thoughts more deeply about the store, your most favorite spots in the store, etc., over the pickup lunch. Thanks for the always fun food content, Jenny.
Oh, love this.
Jenny, I'm delighted to report that M2M is still very much in business. When they opened, they said they would have an upstairs food court opening soon. That has not happened yet, I suspect, due to staffing issues. But not only is the store wonderful, but I feel like it keeps evolving. Like, the lunch options keep changing. Like, I, you know, see new products there all the time. It's an absolute delight.
I would love to do a takeout lunch episode from there.
Let's do it.
It seems to me it could be a tricky place for us to record.
Yeah, I don't think we'll record in the store, but we'll make some notes, and then we'll talk about what we saw.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds good. Thanks for the suggestion, Jenny.
Thanks, Jenny. Yeah, like, thanks for giving us the excuse to just like get a nice lunch and talk about it.
Yeah. Matthew, what you snacking?
Hey, what you snacking? You gotta tell me what you're snacking, or I'll release the Kraken. So what you snacking?
What you snacking?
It is time for me to drive you nuts with only in Japan stuff, and it's going to start out like mildly annoying, and then it's going to get worse in the next segment.
Okay, great.
So I'm snacking on Nishoku bitter granola. And this is an extremely bitter cacao granola, according to the label, made with barley, oats, brown rice, whole wheat, soy, corn, almond, and dried cranberries. I was a little suspicious about how the dried cranberries would integrate in there, but they're really good. It is like kind of a regular granola with some dark chocolate cornflakes mixed in, and I am here for it. I need to go get the bag, though, because it's a beautiful bag, and there's something very funny written on it.
Okay,
I'll be right
back. Do it. Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, wow.
Wife of the show, Lori, picked this up for me at the Kinokuniya import market, although it's not imported.
Would you actually say that it is bitter? Is that a word you would use for it?
Oh, yeah, I would. It's not very sweet.
Okay.
You can really taste the bitter cacao. There are two things on the bag I want to note, that it says it has both a sakusaku and zakuzaku texture. These are two different ways of describing crispy or crunchiness.
Ooh.
In Japanese.
Okay.
Onomatopoeia. And then here at the end, it's got like their mascot is this little like top hat, like Monopoly man kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it says their slogan is "Boys eat granola."
No wonder Lori bought it.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute, Matthew. Hold on.
Yes.
You can't mention these like onomatopoeia, like crunchy terms, without at least attempting to like translate them for us.
Okay,
even though
that is,
I'm sure they
fair.
Maybe don't exist in
okay. So
English.
Sakusaku is like flaky, crisp, or like the sound of like crunching snow, kind of. So that's like the flake part, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And zakuzaku is, it's like a more crunchy, like a grape nuts kind of crunchy, or like a you know, oats, toasted oats granola kind of crunchy.
Okay.
So I think it is referring to that it's a mix of flakes and oat clusters.
Okay.
But zakuzaku to zakuzaku.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
Yeah. So that was really good.
I wish we had more words like this.
This is a very special feature of the Japanese language, that it has hundreds and hundreds of onomatopoetic words that are widely used and widely understood, and are one of the most difficult things for Japanese language learners to pick up.
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, I'm thinking, for instance, of the difference between crispy and crunchy, which are sort of the only two words we have that convey this sort of textural phenomenon. And I understand
Wait,
the difference.
Oh, sorry. Oh, textural. You broke up there for a second. I thought you said spectral phenomenon.
Yeah.
I saw a crispy
ghost.
There are
so many ghosts in my crystal. Yeah. No. I mean, like crisp being like, it's like thin and it has almost like a crackly quality, like a Lay's potato chip. Crunchy being more like an oat cluster kind of thing.
But I, like, imagine if you could say that as Zaku Zaku to Zaku Zaku.
That would be so much better. So
yeah. Okay. So Nishoku Bitter Granola available at some small number of stores in Japan.
Okay, perfect. And then you also have a Now But Wow.
This is going to be my most annoying Now But Wow ever because it is a book available only in Japanese that will not even appeal to most Japanese speakers. So this book is called Nishiyogi Sampo. And the last couple of times I've been in Japan, we have stayed in this lovely neighborhood called Nishiyogikubo in Western Tokyo, which is a neighborhood known for antique shops and like old school cafes and new school cafes and Italian restaurants and for just being like a lovely place to take a stroll. So Nishiyogi Sampo just means strolling in Nishiyogikubo. And it was written, and the book is written by Masayo Meguro, who was born and raised in the neighborhood. But it's sort of a it's a love letter to the neighborhood, and it's the thing I love about it most is, first of all, like, he mentions like 100 places we've been or walked by in the neighborhood. Like, his love for the neighborhood comes through. He's an illustrator, has beautiful like pencil illustrations throughout the book, and the thing I like best about it is not at all a book about how, like, the neighborhood used to be better, like when I was young, and like, you know, here are the ways in which it's gone downhill. Like, clearly he seems
elegy
to think, like,
to
right
neighborhood.
It's like that this is a vibrant living neighborhood that is kind of at its best right now, even though he does have fond memories of, like, you know, places that closed in the past.
So why do you say that even most Japanese readers or speakers wouldn't be interested in it?
It's literally just a book about some random neighborhood in Tokyo that if you don't have any connection to, like, it's hard for me to see, like what you would get out of this book necessarily. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know. I guess, like, if you imagine, like, you know, I've only been to Paris for, like, a couple of days in my life. But if someone wrote a lovely book about, like, a neighborhood in Paris and how wonderful it is to like, live or visit there today, I would enjoy that.
Oh, yeah.
And I will have done this by the time you hear this episode. I went to my favorite tea cafe in the neighborhood, Saten, which Molly has been there. It's where we got hojicha latte, matcha lattes. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, there was a little flyer on the counter for an upcoming event called the Nishiyogi Cha Sampo next weekend. Cha Sampo is like tea walk. And the gist is you walk around the neighborhood and like 40 to 50 different local businesses are serving tea for free. You just, like, you know, wander around. I don't know if there's going to be like a passport with stamps, but I certainly hope so. And like they will serve you a little cup of tea just for coming into their shop.
Oh, and you're going to do this.
I've never been more excited about any event ever. Like, and I on this brochure, it's like, you know, this is the kind of Kagoshima Sencha we'll be serving, like, at this bookstore or this stationery shop. Like, this was designed, like, just to make me happy.
Oh, that makes me happy.
Okay, so there. So that's an event that will be over that you're not going to go to, and a book that you're not going to read, Nishiyogi Sampo by Masaya Meguro.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. I'm going to go cry myself to sleep now.
All right.
Our producer is Abby Circatella.
You can read Molly's Substack newsletter at mollyweisenberg.substack.com. It's called I've Got a Feeling, and I always get a great feeling when it arrives in my inbox.
Oh, thanks.
It's true.
You can listen to Matthew's music, like, everywhere music is. Look for his band Early to the Airport and also his other band Twilight Diners.
Yep. You can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, you know, if you break into the Nutella factory and people there are listening to Spilled Milk, you can rate and review us there.
Yeah, absolutely. No reason not to.
The best way to get your podcast is through espionage, is what I'm saying.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that is 100% stuff you can't actually eat.
That is true.
I mean, because you can't have any.
Yeah, that's right. But like, if you have a factory and you want to improve productivity, like, put our show on really loud.
Yeah, and feed your workers Nutella.
I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
And I'm Molly Weisenberg. We'll just cut this whole part out.
That's fine.
Great.
Okay.
Abby
will figure it out.
Abby will totally figure it out.